Hello and welcome to this online seminar organized by the Hellenic Observatory, the Research Center on Contemporary Greece and Cyprus at the London School of Economics. My name is Vasilis Manastiriotis. I'm the director of the HO Center, and I will be chairing this event today. Our topic today on regional financial centers, pathways for Greece and Cyprus, is an important topic not only for Greece and Cyprus, I think, but also more widely for the Southeast Europe and the East Mediterranean region. After a long adjustment process, the financial systems in Greece and Cyprus have gradually regained credibility and are actively participating in international financial markets again. But the re-internationalization of the financial systems takes place today in quite a different external environment than a couple of decades ago, not only in regards to the technical infrastructure and regulatory requirements, but also, of course, the geopolitical context and the increasing role of non-banking entities in the market. So whereas in the past, the key modalities for internationalization of the financial systems in Greece and Cyprus were mainly based on asset acquisition and maybe client support networking, today, both the modalities and the external environment are different. To discuss this and to debate on the internationalization pathways for the financial systems in Greece and Cyprus, we have a great panel with us today of experienced market participants and policy experts with significant expertise on financial institutions and the evolving business models and the dynamics concerning the development of regional financial centers. Our first panelist in the event today is Professor Nikos Karamouzis, who is Executive Chairman of SME Remedium CAP, an alternative investment fund manager operating in Cyprus. Professor Karamouzis is Chairman of Grant Thornton in Greece, a member of the Board of Directors of Eurobank, and also member of the Board of Directors of Onassis Foundation and Quest Holdings, as well as member of the Advisory Board for the ANEOSIS and the Advisory Committee of ELIAMEP. He is Emeritus Professor at the University of Piraeus and has a PhD in economics from Penn State University, specializing in monetary policy and international finance. Our second speaker, our second panelist, is a person with great expertise on issues of financing in the region. Is Charlotte Roux, who is Managing Director for Central and Southeastern Europe at the EBRD. She joined the EBRD from the US Treasury in 1992 and has served in various positions at the bank, including as a senior banker in the financial institutions team, responsible for the EU EBRD SME Finance Facility, and later as director for Croatia and director for SME Finance and Development. She has a BA in Journalism and Political Science from Indiana University and a master's degree in International Economics from Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Our third panelist is a figure who is very well known in Cyprus, but I think also internationally for his work in international banking and as a policymaker, Dr. Michael Saris, who is currently chairman of the board of directors of Astrobank and has a very long career at the World Bank for, I think, over 30 years, and from where he retired in 2005, taking the position of finance minister in Cyprus, where he served in this position between 2005 and 2008. But importantly, also again in 2013, where he was responsible for the negotiations of the Cyprus adjustment program at the time. He has a PhD in economics and, of course, vast experience on issues of finance, banking, and the macroeconomy, not only in Cyprus, but more generally in the region. Last but not least, our last panelist is Dr. Apostolos Thomadakis, who is head of research at the European Capital Markets Institute, and also research fellow in the Financial Markets and Institutions Unit at the Center for European Policy Studies, CEPS. Dr. Thomadakis has co-authored studies and coordinated projects on issues related to capital markets, the Capital Markets Union, access to capital and SME financing, financial and securities regulation, and banking supervision. Prior to joining CEPS, he was a visiting scholar at the Bank of Lithuania and the Austrian National Bank, and he has also worked for the European Investment Bank and the European Central Bank. He has held academic positions at the University of Warwick, LSE, the University of Bath and elsewhere, and holds a PhD in economics from the University of Surrey, and importantly, a BSc in physics from the Aristotle University of Thessaloniki, which is also my hometown. Now, to moderate this panel, we have with us Professor Anthony Bartzokas, who is currently visiting professor in practice at the Hellenic Observatory Center, and he's one of our research associates. He's professor at the University of Athens and a professorial fellow at the United Nations University in Maastricht. And he has extensive experience not only in academia but also in policy relevant research and policy making, not least through his tenure as member of the board of the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. Professor Brazopas will kick off our proceedings with a short presentation on our topic today, and he will subsequently moderate the discussion with our panelists. Now, before I pass the floor to Anthony, let me say a few organizational things. First, the event is being recorded and will hopefully be made available as a podcast through our website, but also as a video on our YouTube channel. As usual, there will be time for you to ask your questions. If you want to ask a question at the event, please use the Q&A function on Zoom, and we'll read out the questions for you. When you type in your question, please state your name and affiliation if possible. And last, for those using X or the Twitter, the hashtag for today's event is #LSEGreece. So, with these few introductory notes, let me pass the floor to our moderator, Professor Anthony Bartzokas. Anthony.
Thank you, Vasilis. Let me start by saying that this is an event in a series of events that the Observatory is organizing. And the idea is that we select from time to time important strategic issues in the agenda of the Observatory, and we invite policy people, but also academics, to have an interesting debate, a challenging debate. And for that, we provide some background information, an overview of the topic, so to speak. So let me give you a very brief introduction of what is the background, and then we'll proceed with the speakers. Next slide, please. Okay, I think that any kind of discussion about the future of the financial system in Greece and Cyprus should start with a core question. What happened with the banking sector since the crisis? And our suggestion is that three phases went through. The first is restructuring of the asset side, then improvement of the profile of liabilities, and currently the challenge to increase again assets and bring revenues in the system. We think that there are endogenous constraints in this process. One is the structure of liabilities itself, and second, the difficulty to create new assets endogenously in the local market, so to speak. Then we reflect on past experience. And past experience suggests that when the financial systems in Greece and Cyprus tried to increase market shares abroad, they did it in two ways. First was the acquisition of assets, and second, they followed corporates as they were expanding abroad. Our suggestion is that now we need to take a broader perspective, a more comprehensive perspective that goes beyond the banking system. Why? Because we have new exogenous challenges. First, new market segments are, you know, to be grasped in a way. Then non-banking activities have increased and became more prominent. And then we have a completely different regulatory environment. For that, and in order to trigger the debate, we propose five paths for export orientation of the financial system in Greece and Cyprus. Now, let me turn to a few slides just to elaborate on what I was saying. Next slide, please. You can see how important was the first phase, which was really the cleaning of the asset and liability side in the two countries. One problem that I mentioned before, you know, what kind of liabilities they have in the books. Next slide, please. You can see that both in Greece and Cyprus, deposits are very much the majority of what they have in the liability side. And even more, next slide, please. You see that when it comes to household wealth, it's mainly liquid assets, and that makes it difficult to develop the continuity and the connection to assets. Next slide, please. It is very interesting to observe what has been happening in Europe. We see that in a number of countries, the export positions of the financial systems have expanded, but when we zoom in, it is really about three countries: Luxembourg, Ireland, and Netherlands. That's why we bring the perspective of regional financial systems in the picture and in the debate today. Next slide, please. Of course, this is something that the Greek banking system is well understood, and you can see that they are building again their asset bases abroad. Next slide, please. But we think that this is not enough because every study that you see in recent years, especially after Brexit, they point out to the fact that new market segments have emerged, non-banking finance, but also infrastructure as a revenue creation process. Next slide, please. And now, this is the final slide that I would like to share with you. We think that if you take a more comprehensive view of the internationalization of the financial systems in Greece and Cyprus, there are options. First, better market positioning with investment funds. Second, regional integration. Digitalization is important. Capital markets deepening and green finance offering as a new market setting in a way. So this is just ideas of how we can debate about the future, what comes after building up in the financial systems of these countries. Now I finish with my slides, and I have the pleasure to introduce to the debate Professor Nikos Karamouzis. Nikos is a well-known market participant in Greece, but also in Europe. I think he's the first guy who pioneered the idea of the funding gap in the Greek economy as a major obstacle for rebalancing growth, and we're looking forward to his comments. Nico, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. It's an honor for me to participate in this interesting session, jointly with some distinguished speakers, and thank you very much for the invitation. I would focus my presentation on Greece because I understand the issues here better. Greece is coming out recovering from a deep 10-year crisis the last few years. That it was a terrible event, and is recovering nicely, but is facing two major outside challenges. One is the global environment is full of uncertainties and risks, and two, Eurozone and Europe are in a structural stagnation. And keep in mind that 55% of all exports, goods, and services of the Greek economy are directed in the region, in this region. So all things equal, if your major importer of goods and services in trouble, that's a difficult economic constraint. You know the issues about Europe. Perhaps Europe is facing one of the most difficult structural challenges of the recent historic period. And they need leadership. We need leadership and initiatives under leadership to design how we're going to get out of this from technological hysteresis to low productivity to low investment. It's a very critical issue. Now, the Greek economy has come out of the crisis nicely so far. Growth rate is in Greece is outperforming the average growth rate of the Eurozone. Business environment is improving. Business sentiment is improving. We have an improvement in inward foreign direct investments. Nevertheless, the quality of the foreign direct investments is not what we would like. It's a lot of real estate investment. Half of the inward investments are real estate. Unemployment is steadily declining from 27% at the peak of the crisis, if those remember, down to a bit below 10%. The most important achievement of Mnemonia and the adjustment programs has been the restoration of fiscal stability and credibility. Greece maintains a primary budget surplus of around 2% in 2024. That's the projection. The ratio of government debt to GDP is down to 150% of GDP in 2024, and had a very strong decline of the debt to GDP, thanks to some extent to the inflation and to some extent to the initiative by the government. It's important that the cost of borrowing internationally has improved a lot. We are borrowing at terms better than Italy today. Something that is a good step forward. At 10-year bond rates around 3.1%, which is not far away from where Portugal and Spain are borrowing. Unit labor cost has kept below the changes in the Eurozone area. Digitalization is advancing the public sector. The banking system capitalization has been returned. We have capital strength of the banking system, but most importantly, liquidity has restored fully and more. Keep in mind that the Greek banking system has today a ratio of loans to deposits which is below 60%. So there's ample liquidity to fund the economy. And so this is one of the major positive developments. And then finally is the Greek Recovery and Resilience Plan that provide Greece with around 70 billion euros of funds available for investment, 36 billion in loans and grants, and 30 billion euros in structural funds. This is a major boost of the economy from 21 to 26, when the last year that you can disburse, approve the disbursement of these funds. Now, so attractive, the Prime Minister is traveling everywhere, making Greece an attractive place to promoting Greece, but major structural issues, unfortunately, have not been resolved. And the 10-year adjustment programs, unfortunately, did not solve any of the structural, major structural problems. First of all, Greece is still a consumption-driven economy. Private consumption GDP is at 69%, is the highest percentage in Eurozone, versus 53% average in Eurozone. Greece systematically, year after year, underinvests, undersaves, and overconsumes. The ratio of gross fixed capital formation GDP stands at 15.2% in 2023 versus 22% average in Eurozone. And this ratio has been below the European average for the last 15 consecutive years. 15 consecutive years, the ratio of gross capital formation to GDP stands below the average Eurozone rate. And that has led to a cumulative investment gap of over 100 billion euros. More difficult is the issue that gross national savings also stand today at 8.7% of GDP. This is the lowest in Eurozone, where the average is 25.7%. So we undersave, we underinvest, and we overconsume. And this model cannot lead to sustainable high rates of growth unless the country experiences a great leap forward in investment. A major investment boom is required to drive the country forward. Now, why we haven't seen a major investment boom in Greece? Despite the fact that tax treatment of capital have improved enormously, dividend rate tax is 5%, perhaps the lowest in the Eurozone, even lowest than Cyprus, I believe. And capital gains tax has been lowered. Everything is very favorable. And corporate profitability has increased listed companies from 4 billion euros in 2021 to 12 to 13 billion euros in 2023. And 24 be the same. So despite the huge increase in profitability, despite the very nice initiatives by the state providing incentives, lowering the social security tax, lowering the corporate income tax, lowering the dividend tax, lowering the capital gains transfer tax, we do not see an investment boom. I go quickly, what is the problem? First, low spending in R&D, one of the lowest.
1 or 2 minutes, if possible.
Okay. So I skip that. What is the issue here for the Greek economy? We need a major, what is missing? We need billions of equity money to be invested. The country badly needs equity money to be invested. And so, and we need a major investment boom and equity to fund significant investment in green energy transition, in digitalization, ESG application, and in replenishing the capital stock. I believe this is the top priority. A positive development is that we have a development of a local private equity market. Today, the assets under management are about 2 billion euros, with the great help of the Hellenic Development Bank and EBRD and EIF. And we thank them for that. My friend here is from EBRD, and we know each other. But this was a great help. So we hope this money to be directed, and they are directed, to provide equity to SMEs and Greek companies to invest. And this is a major challenge. Closing, to say there is a lot of opportunity. What do you play in Greece, in my view? It plays size. Greek companies are too small, so we have to initiate a great consolidation game, and there is value to consolidation. Two, a major reform in agriculture. It's shameful what has been happening in the agriculture sector in Greece for years. Years after year has been deteriorating. Renewable energy, food, beverage, waste, water and waste management, pharma, logistic hubs, hospitality services, infrastructure, from electricity grids to railways. I mean, we have the worst railway systems in Europe by far. So there are investment opportunities. Greek economy is in transition. We need equity capital to be invested, and I believe that private equity funds now start playing a very vital role in providing equity to SME companies. Thank you.
Thank you, Nico. A very brief question as a follow-up to what you were saying. When people talk about risk capital abroad, they usually think about, you know, a way to catalyze new activities. When we look at the recent experience of private equity in Greece, it's mainly corporate restructuring. Do you see a potential trajectory like the one I described, that private equity becomes more oriented towards new innovative activities?
I think in most cases, local private equities, I mean, in majority of cases, foreign and local private equities, they acquire existing entities and they invest on it. It's the issue of buy, invest and grow. That's our strategy today at SME Limited Cap. And the other funds, they do the same. It's a combination of acquiring equity, investing in the company and grow the company. I believe that the issue of consolidation is key to create competitive players. Companies with 10 million euros turnover is very difficult to compete in the new environment. So, as I said, I'm positive that there are investment opportunities in the SME area between 10 million euros turnover and 75 million to turnover. There are 2,200 companies, most of which they need capital. They need equity to address the challenges of the new era. Okay, so overall, what you are saying is partially correct, but as far as we are concerned in our fund, we have done major investment, not acquiring we acquire companies and then we make major investment to upgrade the infrastructure and improve sales and exports.
Thank you, Nico. Let me now turn to my ex-colleague, Charlotte, who has been monitoring Greece and Cyprus for years. And Charlotte, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Anthony. I appreciate being invited to join this impressive panel, and I'm very happy to take part in this discussion on the financial systems of Greece and Cyprus. A little background first. EBRD started investing in Cyprus in 2014 and in Greece in 2015, following requests from the authorities for a temporary engagement to support the recovery from the deep economic turmoil triggered by the 2008 global financial crisis and subsequent debt crisis in Europe. Amidst the deep recessions in both countries, with very high levels of NPLs and double-digit unemployment, we started working. By now, of course, both Greece and Cyprus have had a remarkable turnaround in their economies, and we are very proud to have contributed to the recovery. EBRD played an important confidence-building role, investing equity in the Bank of Cyprus and in all four Greek systemic banks to the amount of 250 million euros at the nadir of the crises. In Greece, we invested together with the International Finance Corporation private investors and the Hellenic Financial Stability Fund to stabilize the financial sector, re-establish the credit channel, and reopen access to finance for the real economy. We made improvement of corporate governance a key priority for our work with the banks through nomination of experienced independent directors to each of the boards, as well as working with the Hellenic Financial Stability Fund to conduct a review of those boards. Later, we invested in non-performing loan platforms that contributed to reduce the burden on the bank's books and help them return to a solid financial position. Later in 2020, our evaluation department reviewed the work that we had done on the recapitalization of the Greek banks and found that it was highly successful and our execution was excellent. Apart from supporting the resilience of the financial sector, we have played a wider role in both economies, but in Greece in particular, we worked with the governments that were keen to harness our expertise and financial capacity and put it to work in rebuilding the economy. By the 10th anniversary of our mandate in Greece next year, we will have invested more than 8 billion euros, a significant contribution to the Greek recovery, with our strategic focus on supporting private sector competitiveness and sustainable energy and infrastructure. We've participated in the privatization of PPC and advised on and invested in PPPs, as well as a lending program under the RRF. The bank has worked across corporate sectors, investing in green and sustainability-linked bonds, and providing equity and quasi-equity investments. As mentioned by my friend, Mr. Karamouzis, we have invested in 9 Greek private equity funds. Our trade facilitation program has also enabled Greek banks to re-engage in trade finance. In Cyprus, we invested less, 600 million, from 2014 to 2020, when our temporary mandate ended. We will continue in Greece until the end of next year, by the way, and then we will still have a substantial portfolio to manage. From 2017, as the Greek recovery started to take off and actually recovered remarkably quickly from the COVID pandemic, a wave of investment has gotten underway. I agree very much that the investment that is coming is not adequate and there is a need for much more equity, but I must say, I still see a great deal of investment coming into the country, and I'm starting to see an increasing number of Greek firms with an eye for international expansion. Not just the biggest firms that were active abroad even before the crisis, but mid-sized companies, which is encouraging for the future. On a recent visit to Athens, we met with the management of the Athens Stock Exchange to discuss the challenges, particularly increasing trading volumes, share liquidity, and bringing new products to the market. These are common challenges of smaller exchanges across Europe and behind some of the recommendations of the Draghi and Letta reports. In this context, EBRD has worked with a group of 7 regional exchanges in Central and Southeastern Europe to establish a new company to consolidate back office activities with a view to further integrate the exchanges in the future. This group consists of the Warsaw Stock Exchange, the largest, but also Bratislava, Bucharest, Budapest, Ljubljana, Sofia, and Zagreb exchanges. Unfortunately, Athens opted not to participate at this time, but we hope they may take interest as this moves ahead in the future. In any case, solving the problems of small exchanges requires a lot more work, including pension reform, all the way to attracting asset management companies and encouraging publication of research on listed enterprises. I make these comments following on Anthony's remarks about what is required to become a financial center, such as in Singapore. In Europe, of course, Amsterdam is an interesting model because it's attractive for both debt and equity products, and it's a widely used domicile for funds, an attractive market for listing shares. Being part of Euronext is an advantage, But would Athens and or Nicosia benefit from participating in that platform? Or is there another solution that might be better? So while I just want to say two other comments, I think that there's a need for more competition in the financial sector, whether this is from traditional bricks and mortar entrants or from fintechs. The market needs some disruption. It's too comfortable lending to the same big firms while the small ones struggle. And then just to say that the need for more equity is apparent, and that's still a priority for us in our remaining time in Greece. Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you, Charlotte. And let me ask you a question that I suppose everybody who is online from Greece would like to ask. My question is there any role for the EBRD in Greece after graduation?
Well, in fact, one of the most important things for EBRD in the future is to support Greek companies in their international expansion and Greek banks, should they again invest outside of Greece in the way they had in the past. And when I mentioned the mid-sized companies going abroad, this is really exciting. And we will be there to support our traditional clients like Titan, Mytilineos, et cetera. But we'd like to also expand and work with more companies as they grow and expand in Europe.
Thank you, Charlotte. Thank you very much. Now we are very pleased to have Michalis Sarris with us. Michalis is, very knowledgeable on issues related to financial sector internationally, but also in Cyprus and Greece. So, Michalis, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be participating in this webinar. I will be sharing my screen with some slides that broadly reflect what I will be saying. Let me first start. I will split my activities in two parts: the European context, and then talk about specifics of what path can Cyprus follow. So, the European context. Let me start by reminding everybody that the last international crisis was called the global financial crisis because at the center of it was the misbehavior of the financial sector, first in the United States with the subprime market, but then later in Europe when the unwise architects of the Eurozone focused exclusively on the public sector as a possible source of misbehavior. In the event, it was the financial sector, with the exception of Greece, that by accident was the first country to get into trouble. Had Ireland exploded a few months earlier, we would not have been talking about a fiscal crisis. So that crisis, as I say, was centered around the financial sector, hence the resolve after it to make sure that it doesn't happen again and to foster a healthy financial integration. The idea of the banking union was put forward. There is significant progress in the single supervision mechanism, in the single resolution mechanism, but crucially, we do not have the backstop that we need for the Single Resolution Fund, nor the Common Deposit Insurance that is needed to really make this really a Europe-wide union and to keep the confidence that is needed. Similarly, capital markets development, which is a necessary complement, is not in place. Anybody contemplating going cross-border to a bank has to face different accounting systems, different tax regimes, different insolvency and security market institutions, and no market single regulator. Mario Draghi, in his recent very important report, trying to wake up Europe into the need to invest more by the public, but more importantly, the private sector, singled out the absence of the capital market as the most significant constraint. all the things that I describe amount to a strong home bias for EU banks. They are prevented from having the scale and profitability like the United States do to make them an important actor in improving risk sharing and investments across Europe. I also should mention there is a misplaced strong nationalism. There is a presumption that foreign banks coming to our country will not work in our national interest. There is no evidence. I think that is an unsubstantiated fear. And I think the episode we are witnessing now with UniCredit trying to commerce to take over Commerzbank is an example of that. Now, the Cypriot banking system is in much, much better shape, like Anthony has described earlier. Capital, profitability, liquidity, non-performing loans are in much better phase. And more importantly, like everywhere else, it's robustly supervised. I know some complain about too much supervision, but I think that, again, is wrong. I think for the time being, we must remain vigilant. Our banks are feeling strong competition from non-banking institutions in the payment system in particular, Revolut and others. There is very healthy growth in deposits reflecting the saving habits of the Cypriots and poor alternatives. And there is modest demand for loans, like one previous speaker mentioned. It is not 60% in Cyprus, it's between 40 and 50%. The loan to deposit ratio. Now, the one characteristic is that there is strong interest by mostly Greek banks in the Cypriot banks, the systemic ones. Eurobank has taken over the Hellenic Bank as we speak. They have 98% of the shareholding, while there is still nascent and hesitant effort to do what is needed, which is to consolidate the smaller banks, because most of the costs are the same, whether you are big or not, audit, internal risk, compliance. Now, there are five possible areas where banks could go internationally. Banking services, retail and corporate, payments facilities, portfolio and wealth management, investment banking, and corporate bond underwriting. Clearly, Cyprus has no comparative advantage. It cannot compete investment banking and corporate. On banking services abroad, our experience in Greece, in the Balkan countries, and Russia has burned our fingers. There is very low appetite. On the payment system, there are EMIs, but we still suffer from reputational issues connected with the crisis and the haircut of deposits, and thereafter the episodes with passports getting the wrong kind of people to associate their names with Cyprus. And that dies very hard, I am afraid, as Cyprus is discussed in possible boardrooms for possible relocation to Cyprus. So that leaves portfolio and wealth management, a very promising area. And, you know, EU membership, a robust legal system. My Cypriot friends might question that because it is slow, but it is good. We have good judges. We have a good common law system. It just takes too long to resolve issues. And then, very importantly, very qualified, highly qualified talent pool of professionals. They all the time, they come up, as we lose one market, they find another. So this alternative investment funds are already taking hold in Cyprus. We have 9 billion under operation. There is a strong performance. And I think with good regulation, we could attract more foreign clients. Another area is pension funds. We have people here who manage and invest pension funds very wisely. In fact, many pension funds from Greece come to Cyprus and ask Cypriots to invest and manage them. If we could get some change in legislation and allow non-European countries in the Middle East to come and pick their funds in Cyprus, I think that could grow a lot more. And then what I mentioned earlier, the services that facilitate instantaneous cross-border payments, that's an area, electronic money, open banking, that's an area where we could do much better. Now, there are some constraints also. As we move into fintech, there is a problem. We don't have enough people with an educational background in IT. The system is moving in that direction, and we may come up with an intelligent migration policy to facilitate qualified migrants that are now looked upon a little unfavorably. Also, the approval process of these companies has to strike a better balance between caution and responsiveness. And as I mentioned earlier, the legal framework needs to be modified somewhat to be modernized, like in Malta and Ireland, where it is possible to do more things than we are doing in Cyprus. But let me end by saying that above all, we cannot afford any more missteps that will further tarnish the reputation of Cyprus in financial sectors if we want to be a player in Europe. Thank you.
Thank you, Michalis. One question for you. I mean, when people talk about international financial activities or local financial systems, they usually take two different views. One is to focus on the bright side, new markets. The other is to focus on the dark side, which is potential vulnerabilities. And my question to you, you know, drawing on your wisdom and experience, is there an optimal path? I mean, what should be the right balance?
Yes, it's a good question and a tough question to answer. Clearly, you cannot ride success into a disaster because you have not foreseen possible vulnerabilities. I think clearly, if I had to choose, I would forego an opportunity that looked like it had the seeds of potential trouble. I would make sure that I do not ever challenge the regulator or the supervisor that guides me in that direction and the rules that have to be there to make sure that we make sustainable profit.
Thank you, Michalis. And our last speaker is Apostolos Thomadakis. He will bring to us the kind of top-down approach on the things we have been discussing so far. The view from Brussels, so to speak. Apostolos,
thanks a lot. Thank you very much, Anthony, and thank you very much also for the invitation. It's great to share the panel with the very distinguished panelists and hear the views. I have some slides with me that I would like to share with you. Please bear in mind, should be here. Can you see it now? Yes. Let me enlarge it a bit. No, what I would like to do is to bring a bit in the discussion also and put it in the context from the European perspective here in Brussels, and also connect it also with the Capital Markets Union on what we're trying to achieve here in Brussels. Now, of course, we are aiming to have financial markets that are deep, liquid, efficient, where all market participants with the same set of rules, they have access, equal access to financial products and services in the markets where they are active. So this is the aim. I mean, however, we are a bit far away from that. I mean, we lack, as we discuss also and mentioned, ambition, scale and strength. Retail investors' participation to capital markets is limited. We have also another problem, which are, you know, a lot of different market infrastructures, regulated markets, MTFs. We need to further work and try to consolidate as much as possible, connect them. We have a heterogeneous and multi-level legislation. Of course, on top of that, it comes the varying degrees of interpretation, enforcement. And this, of course, impacts the competitiveness and attractiveness of European markets. We are not losing only against the US, but also against China and Asia and the other countries. And the main reason is because we have insufficiently developed ecosystems. I'm going to share a few data. What we see here is a structure of capital markets, essentially the debt securities and the public equity markets across European regions. What we see, of course, we know that Europe is much more heavily relied on debt markets. We can see in certain regions, debt securities are 3 to 4 even times higher, let's say, more weight than private equity markets, with one, of course, difference, which is the Nordic market. What we see, the Nordic market has improved and has changed. I have here 2015, which is the initiation of the CMU action plan in 2022. We see in the Nordics now we have, you know, the public equity markets account much more than debt securities markets. Now, if we zoom in the market capitalization across the regions, again, we have different levels of development. It has remained stable or even slightly declined in Central and Eastern Europe and in Southern Europe, where we've seen much more increase over the years in the Western Europe and in the Northern Europe. Now, of course, if we look across member states, and in particular in the region of Cyprus, Greece, in the southern, and also the Central and Eastern Europe, what we see, again, there is some development for both Greece and Cyprus, which have done much better compared to some other regions, but of course below the EU average. Now, looking at the debt securities, and here we have the three debt issued by governments, which is the largest part. We know that in Central Eastern and Southern Europe, debt issued by government is about 111% of GDP, much less for financial institutions, and for corporates is almost non-existent. And the situation changes as we move to Western Europe and even more to North Europe, where now financial institutions issue much of the debt and government significantly less. Now, for Cyprus and Greece, Cyprus on the left side and Greece on the right side, we have about 78-80% of debt issued by the government, financial institutions, and as I said, corporate bond markets are all very, very limited. Now, we mentioned about financial assets and about households' financial assets, participation to capital markets. Much of that is secured in currency, is held under currency deposits, about 40-36% in Central and Southern Europe. Of course, insurance and pension funds, they take about 20%, and about 35-40% is invested in equity, listed equity, investment funds, and so on. And then we see, again, a comparison with the Western or the Northern Europe, where much more is invested with insurance and pension funds and investment funds. Now, if we look across the 27 member states, on the left side, we have the Nordics, and on the right side, we have the Cyprus, Greece, where the amount of assets held under currency deposits is more than 60%, almost 60%. And of course, this has important consequences, as we discussed also and mentioned by previous panelists, for the participation to capital markets. We need more equity. We also mentioned about financial knowledge and financial literacy. This is also something really important. And we see again here, for both Greece and Cyprus, we are to the bottom, let's say, part, about 20% of the citizens, they have a high knowledge. The green bar is the high knowledge, moderate knowledge, and low knowledge is the red bar. So again, and you see also that how this is connected, participation of households into capital markets also comes with a high rate of financial literacy and financial knowledge, while low participation is also connected with the low knowledge. And of course, this also connects to pension funds. Now, one of the paths, I think, Anton, you mentioned the first one, it was about investment funds. But the problem here is that we have in Europe is the size. We don't have the size the capacity, the liquidity, the depth. The average size of an investment fund in Europe is about 7-8 times that of the US. And of course, if we see on the bottom, let's say, graph where we see the average cost of an investment fund, the green line is for the usage funds, for different types of usage funds, equity, bonds, and so on, compared to the yellow bar, which is the US. Again, we have much more expensive the cost for investment funds. And of course, this affects investors, citizens, retail investors that will have to hold these assets. Now, what is the way to move forward? I mean, of course, much of the focus has been on the integration of capital markets, but I think we should also take a pause and think about how to develop the capital markets. We're trying to integrate 27 national capital markets with a varying degree of development. So if we first try to bring them more or less to the same speed, although that is difficult, but as we see also from the figures that I show you, I mean, we have the Central and Eastern European region and some of the Southern European countries. We are talking about 13, 14 member states out of the 27. They haven't been developed as much over the last 10 years. So any effort to integrate all these heterogeneous markets is very difficult. Retail investors should be at the center, should provide them efficient solutions for long-term savings, try to find ways to attract their savings. We have to boost competitiveness of our capital markets through more flexibility, efficiency, supervisory also efficiency. We need to adopt competition-based measures and promote more passive products that suit retail investors. We should also try to consolidate more the market infrastructure that we have in Europe. We know we have 27 exchanges, CSDs, CCPs. We don't need to bring them down to one, but we need to connect them. We need to connect all these separate liquidity pools together. And the last is, of course, to promote... we need also to promote more financial literacy, as we describe, to help encourage investment on a broader range of financial products. And here it comes, of course, the role that national, regional stock markets can play in Cyprus and Greece to provide access to capital for local companies, to enhance liquidity, strength, the market depth, to integrate more. And I was happy to hear what Charlotte mentioned about the efforts to connect regional market infrastructures, to support innovation. We talk about green financing, ESG investments, digitalization, encourage domestic investments, so bring retail investors, attract retail investors and pension funds, and also to overcome the challenges in terms of regulation, in terms of market efficiency, but also scale and liquidity limitations. So I think that's the important message. If we want to bring the debate a bit the European perspective, we need to help regional capital markets develop much more than they are today. And I'll stop here, Anthony.
Thank you, Apostolos. My question to you is more of a reflection. I mean, one of Mr. Saris was proposing a number of practical steps that could be done from a Cyprus point of view. Mr. Karamouzis was saying that economic dynamism is creating new challenges in a way. You are giving us a broad perspective of what needs to be done in Europe. My question to you is, do you see in Brussels or Frankfurt, a driving force, somebody, an institution that can really drive this process top down? Because we hear what is needed at the country level. We need to know what are the prospects top down in a way. What would be your assessment on this?
Yeah. I mean, it's on the positive side that we've seen over the last 6-8 months a lot of interest on capital markets and how to develop capital markets in Europe. There is a lot of reports that came out the last 6-7 months. Draghi, of course, the letter, the Christian Noyer report also, that they propose different ways to achieve market integration. Of course, I see that more as we now, because we have tried to integrate capital markets in Europe for long, more than 25 years now, and we are still more or less at the same place. There is, of course, some improvement, but we need more. And of course, the crucial part for that is action. Now is the time to act. Now is the time for member states also to act and to help bring their capital markets into the next level. I mean, the Commission, we always sometimes blame the Commission, but we also have to think about what member states and what national governments can do to develop their capital markets. I mean, of course, there is a role for institutions like EIB, EBRD, but that's one part of the solution. We cannot rely exclusively on them. I mean, we cannot increase the balance sheet of EIB, EBRD, and so on. Draghi mentions about public debt, issuing public bonds, euro bonds. That's one way to do it. But given the current political environment that we are, I see that there is not willingness to share common debt. And we have to find other ways. And the one way is to develop our capital markets. We know that we are a bank-centric model, but we should, and this will not change. I mean, Europe will remain bank-centric model, but at least we have to try to reduce it a bit and bring more capital financing.
Thank you, Apostolos. Vasilis, it's up to you now for the second round.
Thank you, Anthony, and thanks to all our speakers. I think very illuminating presentations and points. Before we open up to the questions from the audience, and as people add the questions to the Q&A function of Zoom, can I also say, if you want to ask a question, you have to type it in the Q&A box. You cannot raise your hand and then speak, because I saw a couple of hands indicating. But before we open it up, I think I would like to explore a bit more this question of the importance of private funds, external funding coming in. I think Apostolos was just saying that in Europe in general, you know, the size of investment funds is so much smaller compared to the USA. On the other hand, I think a couple of the previous speakers, and definitely Mr. Kalamouzis as well, said that we need equity capital, we need external funding. And in a way, of course, the other thing is about the point that was made by a couple of speakers as well, that the loans that are coming from the banking system are very low. So the main banks are a bit too comfortable, if you want, in the lending decision. So I wonder whether a focus on equity capital and outside investment funds would actually work against the banking system becoming more prone to lending. So there will this bring more competition, and then the banking system will become more minded towards finding investment opportunities, or it will actually, be a competition that works against the stability of the banking system. So that's an open question. I don't know if who would like to speak on that. Professor Kalamouzis, maybe you'd like to.
During the crisis, the Greek banks lost a lot of money from the NPLs related to SME and small business. If the default rate was 20% for large corporate, it was 70% for small business and 58% from SMEs. So it's natural that they have developed a sense of risk aversion. Okay. So if you see at the credit expansion is mostly focused on the large corporate. That's one. Now, is the bank the problem? It's only the bank the problems. The accounting transparency of SMEs is a major question mark. So in some ways, banks cannot fund companies that the published numbers do not reflect to a great extent reality. Okay, and I have done around 80 due diligence the last few years. It's a terrible thing. I mean, if you are naive, you can lose a lot of money. So that's the second problem. I mean, that the quality of the published numbers of the SMEs in some cases do not facilitate their funding by the banking system. Okay. The third one is there is in Greece, family business used to be a blessing. Gradually, it's turning out to be a problem because the second generation, there's a lot of feuds. They cannot decide on leadership. They don't want to invest more money. So converting family business to institutional management and private equity is another major challenge here that we have to face. RRF, all these billions that you hear, there are 800 applicants so far, and there is a distribution in favor of larger tickets. Okay, so from the RRF, in my view, people don't accept that, but that's reality. If you look at the numbers, and I've done that, is tilted more to mid to upper level corporate or large corporate or big projects, big pharma projects, big energy projects, especially green energy. They are very big projects funded by RRF. So again, the SME is out. How many companies have been listed in the Athens Stock Exchange of SME nature? If I say zero, I would think that I'm speaking to in a hyperbole. No, but I think it's very few or zero. So you have companies that they have no access to the capital markets. Okay, they cannot issue long-term bonds, and they have no access to the banking credit in a way they like. I'm not blaming the banks. I'm saying as well the quality of the accounting of this SMEs problem. So the Greek government has to intervene, imposing stricter standards of publishing accounts, stricter auditing requirements to help to improve the situation. But unless we create bigger companies, my own personal view is that small companies, unless they have something which is really patent, they cannot compete internationally. I have seen that 100 times in my visit. You need companies that they can absorb the enormous investment required today to upgrade the capital stock of the green companies for the green transition, for digitalization. Look at the numbers of the European Commission about the digitalization of Greek SMEs. It's at the bottom end of the ranking. So I don't want to, there is a serious issue here about funding the growth with equity in the Greek economy.
If I may add something, Vasily, I think part of the reason why bank lending is experiencing a sort of low levels is twofold. One is that much of the investment in new projects, new ideas, is not of the nature in the past. You wanted to build a textile mill, you needed heavy machinery. Now, to get into a modern technology, you need a small computer. Also, if I may say so, with all due respect to my fellow bankers, many of the loan officers do not understand the business that is being proposed to them. If you're going to borrow to build a house or even something a little less complicated, you know how to analyze it. If somebody comes up with you with something innovative, also in fairness, these things are more risky. They have to be looked at a little bit with a venture capital hat. That's why many countries, including Cyprus and Greece, are trying to go to the EIB and also blend it with their own funds and see if we can encourage these startups. Also, the ECB has made it attractive for banks to deposit their money there, if you can get 3.5 or 4% in the ECB, why should you chase some borrower for 6 or 7%? I simplify a little bit there, but I can tell you there are all these things that one has to look at in a broad sense to come up with an answer to your question. There are a number of forces that are really pushing that direction. And I think, the situation in Europe, in Europe, bank assets are 300% of GDP. In America, it's 120% of GDP because most of the other funding, as you say, as somebody said earlier, is coming from equity financing.
Charlotte, would you like to come in also on the
yes, if I may,
on the experience from the development bank side? Yes.
Thank you, Vasilis. No, I would just like to say about first, I agree completely with Mr. Karamouzis that the SMEs don't present themselves very well often to the banks. That being said, there are ways of fixing this, and it has a lot to do with incentives and disincentives. So but I think increasing competition is just something that would be really important. And I'm looking across, we have a Greek company where we which we are financing, which has, it's an online insurance company that has taken advantage of the failure of a company in Romania to grab a big chunk of market share. And I think that that kind of nimble behavior and, quick, this kind of first mover advantage in the digital space is something that's missing for banking in the Greek market. Oh, there are online banks in Romania. I'm just using Romania as a comparator. Because it, and it's not a country with great intermediation either. The banks are very profitable, but the SMEs struggle to get financing there too. But it is a market with a lot more competition. And I do believe that more competition would open more opportunities for the Greek companies. So, yeah.
Now, you mentioned, before I pass the floor to Apostolos, because you mentioned competition, we have a question from the audience, and I want to bring it in while we continue the conversation by Harry Tsakalotos. He is asking that, about the competition in the banking system, if you want. There are four systemic banks in Greece with around 95% market share. Should there be more banks to increase competitiveness in the banking sector? Finance SMEs and give an impetus in the Greek economy. So,
well, from my point of view, absolutely. For a country as big as Greece, four banks is really not enough. And we see in countries that are smaller that have two or three banks that they really suffer the same problem of the small enterprises not getting financing. But those are sectors like in the Baltic states where they used to have more market players, but there's been consolidation. So I think there's definitely room for more banks.
Can I add?
Can I pass the floor to Apostolos first?
Thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you, Vasil. No, on the competition, the banking sector, I agree. We need to allow for more competition, also allow for cross-border consolidation of banking institutions. But I want to go a bit on what we discussed about the SMEs. It's more difficult, as described by Mr. Karamouzis, also due to the transparency and so on, for these companies to access public markets. But we need also to, I think we have a problem of alignment, to align the direction in which we want to go with the policies that we are going to implement. Draghi mentions in the report the important role of institutional investors, insurance, pension funds to invest in fintech, in innovative companies, small, young, and so on. Yes, but on the other hand, the regulatory framework that we have in place has a different direction. Of course, investment to this type of companies is a long-term project, while the regulatory framework has a more of a short-term approach. We have Solvency II and requirements for insurance companies. We have the for pension funds, IOPR. We have a capital requirement for banks, so which makes investments into this type of companies much more difficult. So we need to align a bit what we want to achieve with the policies that will help us to achieve that.
If I may say, I think the market is beginning to reflect that. For example, in Greece, there are some smaller banks. I don't know if it's not a matter of advertising, but for example, the Optima Bank is coming in and is being more agile. And because the large banks take longer and are less flexible, I think smaller banks, particularly if they can choose niches, it's not a matter of policy. You are not going to break up banks, I think. But I think it is possible that private enterprise, when they see space, they can come and occupy it.
Can I add something? Or?
Yes, Nicola.
Competition is getting intense in certain areas, payments. Revolut has 1 million clients in Greece. N26 has 500,000 clients. So the Greek banks, the next 5 years, unless they do something major, they're going to get out of the payment business. Credit card payments, cash cards, they could get out of it because they are not competitive any longer. Where is the problem? Mortgages. Okay, there's an issue with mortgages. It might be two sides, I mean, both sides. But today, one of the major problems with investment is that there is no housing investment. As a percentage of GDP, housing investment is only 1.5%. During the beautiful years in 2007 and 8, it was before the crisis of Lehman, investment in housing was 11% of GDP. The average European is around 5%. Okay, so Greece is building up a major shortage of middle-class housing. Major. And the Airbnb and all these things introduced intensify, I mean, make the problem even worse. Where is a major problem of credit is in the area of SMEs and small business. There, I believe there is a problem, and I don't know what is the solution. Obviously, Optima is a good addition, they add, but the total they have that outstanding credit is only 3 billion. And they add 800 million per year. It's a very good to have, very good to exist, very good to compete, but does not answer the major problem that we have, which is the funding of the next round of growth in Greece. And foreign banks do not fund Greek projects, period. Why? It's a long story, but foreign banks, given the spreads and the risk appetite, whatever is the reason, do not fund Greek projects. The Greek banks fund projects. Either there are foreign acquisitions of local operators or major project finance type of projects, Hellenicon, airports, everything is funded by the Greek banks. There's no foreign banks participation in this game, except organizations like BRD, perhaps because they understand the country better, they manage better risks in the way they do it. But this reality. The reality is that the corporate sector today, below the top 300, 400 companies, needs to find equity and debt. And this is missing. I don't have the solution, but I'm saying what's the problem, which is the easy way out.
That's half of the solution to identify the problem. Apostle, and then I want to ask...
Can I ask Mr. Karamouzis, I mean, why is that? Why we cannot attract foreign investors? Is that because it's not attractive, the environment? Is because the complexity?
Because competition for the top 400 companies to fund them and for the 10 major projects is very intense. So the spreads that you end up are non-competitive for most of the foreign banks. Okay? So competition exists in the upper level corporate. The good large corporate borrows today with 1.5 spread. Shipping borrows between 1.6 and 2.5 spread, which is not a low risk business, okay? But this is an area that banks are competing a lot. And spreads, credit spreads in those business areas is going down in terms of large corporate. The credit spreads in large corporates is going down every day, okay? Where it does not go down is SMEs and even worse, small business. That's today's reality. So there is competition at the higher level, a lot. There is competition on the payments. There is competition on the asset management business. What there is no competition is funding SMEs and small business. That's, I would say, is the major challenge today.
Nico. Let me bring another question. I want to address it to Ms. Saris, more specifically about Cyprus. You did mention that you know, one of the solutions for Cyprus is focused on financial services. If the it can fill the gaps in terms of skills in the fintech sector. There's a question by Bernard Casey saying, can a country such as Cyprus become a center for excellence for financial services, or should it become a backroom for existing centers? After all, it cannot compete with Amsterdam and London, so should it seek to complement them, given that it does have some skills and advantages in some?
Yes, it does. It's a fair question. I did mention that in a number of areas we cannot we cannot compete in investment banking, in corporate bond underwriting. But I think that we have a very able force of accountants and lawyers, and I think that's what the person asking the question is referring to, that are already providing a lot of backroom support to a lot of international firms, including banks. So to some extent, we are already doing that, but there is no reason why in the area of facilitating payments or in alternative investment funds where you can, the portfolio could be in real estate or something else, a smaller country like Cyprus could not play a role. But obviously, if you mention Amsterdam and London, obviously we are not going to compete in the areas where they are excelling.
Very good. Let me bring it a bit to financial innovation and fintech you know, the kind of more digital side of the story. We have a question by Nicolas Savieris, who says, what do you think is the relevant way, the potential importance of financial innovation, especially focusing on new digital banks, compared to other factors in Greece, I imagine, in strengthening the robustness of the financial system. I don't know if Charlotte would want to say something on that.
Well, I sort of commented on this earlier. I think that there is room definitely for digital players in the financial sector, not just bank, but it goes across the board. I guess one of the challenges is the extent to which households are ready to use digital instruments. And what we've seen is that during COVID, the government really made a big move forward to digitize government services and access to information from the government. So I think that people probably would be ready for it. It's simply now finding the right investors to, you know, to take advantage of that opportunity.
I guess that speaks a bit to the question about financial literacy that Apostolos brought up. Can I ask, do you see the on that particular front, the Cypriot and Greek financial systems being quite similar? I mean, we saw in the data that there's financial literacy, the data quite similar, but in terms of the potential of financial innovation, digital banks, would we say that Greece and Cyprus belong to the same group, the same category?
If this is for me, Vasilis, this is a difficult question. I mean, probably yes, but I don't know. Probably Mr. Karamouzis and Saris, Mr. Saris, they have a better view on that. But I agree that financial literacy is really important. Of course, at the EU level, there is nothing that Europe can do or the Commission can do about it. This is falls into national governments. But there should be a strategic plan, because this is something, of course, you cannot change from one day to the other. It will take generations. We saw, as mentioned, change during the COVID years. And the new generations are more digitally agile, let's say, and we'll see that to further improve, and will certainly help also and change the landscape. But for what will be the path for Greece and Cyprus, I don't know. I don't have a view on that.
We are, in terms of literacy, I should add that we have quite a good program now, a partnership between the university and the Central Bank of Cyprus. The problem, as I look at the people attending, they tend to be those who already know a lot, but hopefully gradually we'll get to more people. We are also trying to look at behavioral economics as a source of wisdom of how do you pass on these messages to make people, because we talk about competition, but there ought to be on the side of the consumer also a more shopping around attitude that I think is less developed, at least in Cyprus, maybe also in Greece, that is in other countries, that also puts the pressure on the provider to be more aware of the quality and the price of their service. I'm talking about the financial product and the service of it. I think we are a little lethargic in moving from one place to another in response to better quality. But as I say, now more and more people, particularly in a period of very low interest rates, it was a lot of annoyance at the spread that remained very high. In other words, borrowing, lending rates moved quickly in response to ECB action, and deposit rates hardly moved at all. And there, I think there is more room for pressure from the consumer.
Yeah. Okay, let me move to another question. I think I will address to Mr. Kalamouzis. The question is by George Kaoudis. How has the role of non-banking financial institutions such as asset managers, microfinance, venture capital funds, and leasing companies evolved in contributing to Greece's economic growth and investment landscape? Mr. Kalamouzis, you mentioned that a lot has improved in Greece, including the business sentiment, financial flows coming in, FDI, lower debt, lower unemployment. Is there a visible contribution by...
Very little, with the exception of the last few years, the emergence of a local private equity industry, which is the assets under management today is around 2 billion euros approximately, and is growing. And some of them are focused on technology, others focus on industry, others focus on restructuring, others on growth. But there is an active local market. And also at the upper level, we have a lot of foreign private equity funds that are very active in acquiring major players, from national insurance to PPC, I mean, major, to distribution networks. So there is an active private equity market now at all levels. At the highest level of companies and projects, we have foreign institutions, foreign private equities. At the lower level, we have this growing participation by the Greek now. Leasing and factoring and all these things, they are all controlled by the banks. They have their own subsidiaries, so there's only a small, as far as I know, one small factoring company, which is, based on information I have, it would be sold to one of the banks. So effectively, banks control leasing and factoring. So there's not much alternative ways to fund your business. Optima and Attica now, that is recapitalized, seems to focus on the lower end of the market, charging more commissions, higher spreads, and taking more risks. But it's another market that they specialize. The large banks do not seem to have an interest in this. One thing on digital, the Piraeus Bank is creating the first pan-European, at the end, digital platform called Snappy. The rest of the banks, they have the digital banking within their operations. Personally, I would think this is, has certain disadvantages, but I have full respect on my colleagues that decide on that. So, and so only Piraeus Group is going to try to create an independent entity outside the bank, Snappy, to provide to digital clients digital banking services, okay, which is not within the legal framework of the bank, and is doing that with a partner, an international partner, okay. Otherwise, the rate at which Revolut, and I'm not advertising Revolut, I'm saying, I'm a client and I see the functionalities they provide, and I'm quite impressed at the pan-European level. So, not to occupy most time, but the problem remains with the Greek, some of the Greek banking entities. You apply today for a credit, and the credit is disbursed after 6 months. That's an issue.
Mm.
Cyprus quite okay. Better.
We're running out of time, but I want to ask one question for everybody in the panel. A bit the fifth of the pathways that Anthony mentioned concerned green finance offerings, and I would like to hear in a few words. We only have 3 minutes left from each of the panelists. What is their impression about the potential for Greece and Cyprus to move in this direction in a credible way, relating also where the economy is, where the businesses are in that regard. Charlotte?
Yes, I'm happy to go first. We see great interest from Greek clients to developing these instruments, whether sustainability-linked bond, which was what PPC did before they had the capital, before they did the privatization, and we participated and we were really excited about that. To know that in our view, very often sustainability-linked bond results in more important transformation of a company than does issuing a green bond, because, you know, a green bond is perhaps harder to issue by a company that is in a quote unquote dirty industry. But if you are one of those companies and you make certain commitments to decarbonize your business, it has much more impact. So I think that there's a lot of interest. And of course, Greece is making tremendous strides in renewable energy. And in the longer run, this will impact the economy. It's definitely a competitive edge. So it takes time to work through, but I think that compared to many other countries, Greece sits in a very good position on the energy front. And that is not something I can say about all of our advanced countries of operation. Thank you.
Thank you so a lot. And Apostle, is this how it looks from Brussels?
That's the way to go. I mean, both countries should capitalize on that. And the green finance is the future. Europe is also advancing on it in terms of issuance of green bonds and other instruments. But of course, one way is that, I mean, we should also make sure that we have a bit of consistency, more transparency, as Charlotte also mentioned about greenwashing and all these things, the taxonomy. We should make sure that all abide and follow the same rules and agree on the same definitions of what is green and what is perceived as green investment. But certainly that's the way in the future.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Michal, you have a few seconds if you would like to add something.
Yes, I think we are slowly moving from talking about it and ticking a box and doing some training in it into really doing something about it. I think there is more lending in photovoltaics, as Charlotte mentioned, in terms of the renewable energy, and also pressuring people in designing things to do it in an energy-friendly way. But I think it's still hesitant. I think it will grow as time goes by.
Okay. Thank you to all for your contributions. I think we have to stop here. I think these are many, many interesting ideas and prompts that we can follow up, and the Hellenic Observatory Center will follow up on these issues in 2025 with new events. Thanks to all the people in the audience who joined us, and all our speakers, and especially to Anthony Bazokas for organizing the panel.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.